Larry, let's start with the current situation of the Ukrainian army. They're talking about mobilizing 200,000 citizens by the end of the year. How realistic is that?
About as realistic as I'm going to go buy me a Powerball ticket and win the lottery tomorrow. So, be happy to share some of the money with you if I win, which means I ain't winning. You ain't collecting a payday, okay? Same for the Ukrainian army. All right, so let's assume they can dragoon another 200,000. Where are they going to train them? It's not like there are mi secure military bases inside Ukraine, where the guys can show up, go to sleep in their barracks at night, knowing that they're not going to get blown up in their sleep, that they can march in formation without getting taken out by a drone. It's ludicrous. So if the Ukrainians manage to snatch up that many guys, then the question would be, where are you going to train them? Romania, Poland, Germany, United Kingdom, France, someplace, but it ain't going to be Ukraine. And the media, let's give the media credit. They have been consistent. They've handled Joe Biden the same way they've handled Ukraine. Okay. That Joe Biden, man, he is so smart, they won't let him on Jeopardy because he'd win all the money. And they're afraid if he got all the money, he would not be our president because he's so wonderful. He's so smart. His mental acuity, first rate. I mean, they're going to stop calling it the Einstein Award. They're going to call it the Biden Award because Biden's so much smarter than Einstein. Mentally fit, sharp as a tack. He's great. And then last Thursday, the mouth open and, and Trump's going, I don't even know what the guy just said. And then the media climbs on board, goes, oh my God, there's something wrong with him. He's got degenerative mental disease. Well, they've been doing the same thing with Ukraine. Oh man, Ukraine's army is a mighty force. It is overwhelming the Russians. The Russians are on their heels. They're retreating from the Black Sea because the Ukrainians are sinking every ship and they're downing every aircraft. They've killed at least 500,000, if not a million. I mean, it's got to be a million dead Russians now. It's horrific. They're left to invading prisons and dragging people out of prisons against their will, most of whom are pedophiles anyway, to put into their army without any training. And meanwhile, Ukraine's got the most massive air defense system ever. We shoot down every inbound missile. And now we get this latest Russian offensive, and they're sweeping the Ukrainians back like, a broom sweeps up dust bunnies. And the media's like, oh my God, what happened? Where did this come from? As I said, they. Give them credit. They're consistent. With Biden, they're delusional. With Ukraine, they're delusional. They lie, lie, lie. But it gets to the point where the actual actions that people can see can no longer be hidden. So Russia's blowing up every aircraft they dare to land on an airfield that's not buried underground. Russians are blowing it up. Russians have basically taken Chasiv Yar, which is huge. I mean, that is a major, major accomplishment. The Ukrainians are downplaying it. They're sort of like that Captain John Smith. He was captain of the Titanic. You're going, reporting on the radio, yeah, we got a few ice cubes on deck, but nothing serious. We're okay. Well, we'll see you in New York in a few days. Didn't go too well. That ship sunk. And that's where Ukraine's sinking.
It seems that Ukrainians want to have a offensive before the NATO summit happening. And at the same time, we are hearing that there are some differences between Zelensky and Syrsky. What's going on right now in Ukraine?
Let's just say that you celebrated Christmas. You're a kid. and you tell your parents, I want a pony for Christmas. Did you get the pony? No. Ukraine, we're going to have a counteroffensive for the summit. You got as good a chance getting a pony as getting a counteroffensive. They're getting shellacked. They're getting hit with these glide bombs, the 3,000 kiloton, 3,000 kilo variety, which is 6,000 pounds. And then the 1,500 kilo variety, which is like 3,300 pounds. And then the 500 kilo, which is like 1,000 pounds. They're getting pummeled. You know, anytime they assemble any group of guys together, they're getting smashed with one of those bombs. And the group then disappears. Where'd everybody go? You know? So, yeah, they wanted to do it for the NATO summit. Say, hey, look what we're doing. We're on a roll. We're heading towards victory. Meanwhile, the Russians are just, it's the Anaconda strategy. Squeezing, 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 till their eyes are going to pop out. Did you ever see the movie Goodfellas? So yeah. There's a scene where Joe Pesci's got this guy who's been a problem. He's got his head in a vise, and he's tightening the vise. And the more he tightens, the more the eyes bulge, till finally he tightens to the point the eyes pop out. That's Ukraine, okay? That's exactly what's going on with Ukraine now. Just put that image in your mind and you'll understand. You don't have to be Clausewitz. You don't have to be Sun Tzu. You know, don't have to be some great military strategist. Ukraine's head is in the vise, and Joe Pesci are the Russians, and they're tied in.
Yeah. Larry, what's, in your opinion, what's going on between Zelensky and Zelensky right now? Is there any sort of strategy on the part of Zelensky that Zelensky is not happy to operate?
Oh, yeah, but before I answer that, let me correct myself. I said Goodfellas, it was Casino. The movie was Casino, not Goodfellas. Pesci, he was a nasty character in both. Speaking of nasty characters, Zelensky. Now, Zelensky's taller than Joe Pesci, okay? And I don't think Zelensky has as good a sense of humor as Joe Pesci. But Pesci earned a nickname in his movies of being a butcher. Zelensky has lived up to his reputation being a butcher. And whether it's fair or it's not fair, he's going to catch the blame. And so now it looks like Zelensky is wanting to get rid of Zelensky and replace him with God knows who. But it's not going to matter, because Zelensky is not a magician. He can't magically, you know, wave a magic wand, pull out a cape, and produce, you know, new brigades of soldiers that are trained and ready to go to combat. He doesn't have that ability. And, you know, he's made some bad tactical decisions. You know, what the Ukrainians probably, what could have really prolonged this war is if when the Russians started the offensive up around Kherson, that they really pulled back and they consolidated their lines of defense and really did build some lines of defense that were back from the front. And do that. They kept pouring troops out there, and those troops are getting chewed up and killed at the rate. I think yesterday the rate was all like 2,500 in a day. So it's consistently now over 2,000 a day, killed and wounded. Ukraine can't sustain that rate of loss. They just can't. They're gonna lose combat effectiveness. They're already losing combat effectiveness.
Are they losing more than 2,000 soldiers per day?
Yeah. That's what the reports, Russian Ministry of Defense is reporting, and you know their numbers are pretty reliable. But we saw sort of confirmation of it last week from Zelensky himself, where he was, you know, the video where he said, "Hey, we don't have much time. Oh, time's running out, huh?" He goes, "We got all the dead and wounded on the battlefield. Oh, so you're now admitting that you're getting losses on the battlefield. Before it was like, oh, no, we're winning. Yeah, losses? Oh, who's No, yeah, we lost maybe 31,000 people the entire war. 31,000, nothing. It's nothing. Singing a different tune now. Because I think he sees and recognizes Trump's likely to become president. If Trump survives the crooked election and all the lawfare tactics and doesn't get assassinated, then he's going to come into office. He'll get the nomination. It will be clear that he's going to get elected. And at that point, they're going to open lines of communication, I'm sure, to Zelensky and say, hey, little man, you're going to shut this thing down now. Or else, you want to keep going. That's your option. But you will not be coming here to the United States. The welcome mat's out. The visa's gone. You will... We'll treat you as a war criminal. We'll take you or confiscate your property. Or come for a nice retirement. You choose. Well, if Zelensky's still alive by then, I think he's going to go, you know, that Donald Trump, I never realized what a smart guy he was. He's got some good points. We're going to take him up. He wants that beach property in Vero Beach, which is just about 3.5 hours east of me here. Yeah, nice area, great area. Got a lot of very wealthy people down there. He'll fit right in if he survives.
Larry, did you hear these two Russian pranksters who called
Vovan and Lexus? Vovan and Lexus. I love those guys. Oh, my God.
And when the way that Hillary was responding to them, that she was asking to go, Ukrainians go on offensive in order to help Joe Biden getting reelected. And why they do see this strategy working for them, and how important Ukraine is for them, in your opinion, how important Ukraine is for Democratic Party?
Oh, it's not important at all. The only thing it's important for is making some money. You know, adding to the retirement account or ensuring that you've got enough money flowing to the defense corporations that they'll keep kicking money back to the members of Congress, you know, both Republicans and Democrats alike. But Ukraine's no longer a winning issue. You know, right after the war started, boy, people had lapel pins. They had flags out in front of their house. They had signs up, we stand with Ukraine. Well, you don't see those anymore. Because, you know, the word's getting out. You realize these guys are a bunch of Nazis. They're wearing swastikas. They're reading Mein Kampf. They're singing songs about Uncle Adolf. And plus, they're not a democracy. They've shut down opposition political parties. They're locking up the media. They're locking up priests. They're attacking Christian religion. They're thugs. And so that, you know, the word's starting to get out and around. So, no, the Democrats aren't going, oh, boy, yeah, well, that's come our litmus test. They just assume it goes away. Now, they would, if Ukraine could, you know, get the ruby slippers from Dorothy and Wizard of Oz and, you know, tap them together 3 times and make a wish, that they could defeat Russia and that Russia would be incapacitated and crippled. Yeah, if Ukraine could do that, that might sort of help the Dems. Oh, another great victory. You brought down Putin. Yeah, Putin's dancing all over the grave. They're laughing at Biden. I mean, the different memes that are popping up internationally are just hilarious. Different themes from, you know, Biden pooping his pants to, you know, falling asleep on stage to, you know, nobody knows who to deal with overseas. So Ukraine is a dead end for the American politician.
And we've learned that the United States is going to help Ukraine with $2.3 billion, that which mean that they're gonna send 3 to 4 Patriot batteries to Ukraine. And how would that be beneficial for Ukraine today?
It's not. It's not going to stop the airstrikes. They're not going to be able to engage many of the Russian missiles that are inbound. So it just is more money coming to the U.S., to, I guess, Lockheed Martin's involved in the production of Patriot. So maybe some more money for Lockheed Martin. But it's not going to change the condition on the ground for the Ukrainians. They're still at a disadvantage.
Yeah. How did you find the visit of Orban to Zelensky's office and then to Russia? He was trying to make some sort of agreement between these two. He was talking about ceasefire. But it seems that in the eyes of Ukrainians and Russians, ceasefire doesn't mean anything right now. And why do you understand what Orban is doing right now?
Yeah. Orban, even though he's head of the EU right now, or the sits in the chair for 6 months, his real audience he's working with is NATO. So you got Charles Michel. I forget which role he holds in that mess of the EC. He was bitching about Orban going. Donald Tusk, the prime minister of Poland, was saying, this is, who does he think? Is this a joke or is he really there? You know, he was outraged by Orban going. But Orban coordinated it with NATO. The NATO party said, yeah, go ahead, please go. See if we can work something out. Because NATO realizes it's going to get its ass kicked if it gets engaged. And so Orban gets rebuffed in Kiev. And then he goes to Russia and he's going to come back and report. I mean, look, the Russians are, they've got Ukraine in the crosshairs. They're going to destroy Ukraine. But Putin is willing to call a halt, provided that Ukraine withdraws from these areas that are now annexed by Russia. And sits down and has serious negotiations. So it's up to us, NATO, to negotiate this, because NATO is not ready to fight at all. Good God, the Germans reported the other day that out of their 300,000 man force, they only got enough rifles for 60,000. You know, you just give them wooden toy rifles. Yeah, just pretend it's a rifle. Just like we pretend that this guy over here is a woman. Same thing. We'll call them transgender guns. You know, they don't really fire. They won't really hurt anybody. But you can pretend like you did when you were a kid. Only this time they're actually put out in real combat. And what are they going to do? You know, the numbers of the available active duty forces that are trained in Britain, lowest in years, same for France. You know, so NATO's not ready to get into a fight with Russia. And Russia's put them on notice. You know, they basically said, you keep this shit up and we're gonna hit you hard. And you know, the West is like, don't talk to us like that. You're using a mean voice. You know. Yeah, Russia's using the mean voice. They mean what they say. And, you know, right after that botched attack in Crimea with Sevastopol on the beach with the attack of missile, Austin got on the phone real quick with Belousov, his counterpart, and basically said, hey, man, we didn't mean that. We're sorry. And Belousov said, putting you on notice, any of your drones come into the Black Sea, we're going to blow them up. Then they won't survive. And, you know, your manned aircraft, similarly, they're not welcome here. Last I checked, no drones have flown into the Black Sea since. So you're looking at the Russians getting tougher, the tactical situation becoming more dire for Ukraine. And there's not a damn thing NATO can do about it. They can talk about it. They can, you know, wring their hands, sit around in a meeting and go, oh my. And I used to I worked with a guy at State Department. He later became ambassador to Chad. Little guy. And going to talk to him, and he would do this literally. Come in and talk to him, he'd go.
Oh.
You know, one of the other officers said, his name also was Larry. They said, oh, Larry's having a hard bowel movement. Now, that's what's going on right now as far as the Ukrainian situation is going. There's no easy. What's NATO going to do? We're going to deploy them. Let's deploy more Patriots. You don't have any. Oh, okay. Let's get those HIMARS up here. We don't have any of those either. Oh, how about the M777 howitzer? We got spare barrels? Nope. 155 millimeter shells? Yeah, we got a few, but it'll last 2 days. And one Abrams tank? Oh, no, never mind. It's too many of them are now showing up on the Red Square in Moscow. You know, they're going to open up like a used Abrams tank dealership there. They're getting so many. So, I mean, we just walked down the list. What is NATO's option? Oh, I know. We'll mobilize Sweden. That'll scare those Russians. We'll just tell them it's the Vikings come back to birth. And the same, we get the Norwegians and the Finns. Get them all ginned up, and we'll have about 20,000 of them. And get them in a Viking boat, maybe, and have them paddle their way towards Russia. It's just, what's NATO going to do? Come on. So, and that's where I come back to the analogy I drew earlier of Ukraine is the country version of Joe Biden. Just as Joe Biden has got Parkinson's dementia, Ukraine's got the Russian blues. You know, the Russians are pummeling them. The Russians got more soldiers. They got more factory capability. They got more production capability. They got more aircraft. They got more artillery. They got more air defense. They got more of everything.
Larry, do you understand what's going on in Ukraine? Zelensky is asking to the Western country, is asking for money to give them. Then the government gives that to the military industrial complex in Ukraine in order to provide them with weapons. What do they have a military industrial complex capable of providing weapons?
No. And you should have used the term they had one. Russia's been steadily destroying it. And now that they've taken out significant portions of the electrical power grid, even if those factories existed, how are you going to power them so that their machines can operate? They can't buy all that electricity from Europe. So really, it's a straight up debacle. And you know, the Europeans have no good options with Ukraine, and Ukraine is not in any condition to help itself or to turn the corner.
Yeah. Zelensky was talking about the situation, the political situation of United Kingdom. He's not happy with Sunak losing his position right now in the United Kingdom. But when it comes to the Labour Party, do you find any sort of difference in their policy toward Ukraine?
No. A couple warm spit, about that much difference. It's just, you know, they're like, I don't see them necessarily being as aggressive. That may be the one, you know, they will start pulling back. The Labour really wants to be part of the European Union. They want to be loved, you know, the Labour Party wants to be loved by France and Germany and the Netherlands and Luxembourg and Poland and Czechs, Slovaks. Please love us. Please let us back into the club. Well, The rest of the EU is just absolutely batshit crazy with the desire to try to keep fighting Russia. So they said they'll tell the Brits, yeah, you can come back into Brexit, provided you put some troops up and let's get those boys over there to Ukraine as soon as possible. Yeah, I wouldn't, and I'd anticipate that the Labour Party would do that. So it looks like the Reform Party is the only one who's got a credible voice right now against the war. Everybody else is trying to figure out how, you know, the old Cowboy Joe and the Fish song, 1, 2, 3, 4, what are we even fighting for? Next stop is Ukraine.
It seems that the Ukrainian army is sending a large number of forces to the border with Belarus. And what's the importance of that border right now and why they're doing this?
Well, there's been a buildup of Russian forces up there, but they also may be trying to provoke Belarus into attacking in order of hope to entice the rest of the NATO countries to enact Article 5 and come to the rescue. I don't see the rest of the NATO countries doing that, number one. It may also be on the part of the Russians. They massed some forces up there, but they're tempting Sursky and the Ukrainians to deploy as many, you know, a large number of troops up there. Well, the troops are up there sitting across the border looking at the Belarusian side, not fighting. That means they're not fighting, and their ability to reinforce and protect areas all along the 1,000-mile line of contact is gone. They've effectively been taken out of rotation. So that's another thing that could be happening.
When it comes to the new elections in France, we had the right-wing party. Then in the second place, we had a left-wing party, and Macron's party is in the third place. But it seems that Le Pen is not interested in sending French troops to Ukraine as Macron wanted to do that. He was, right, at least he was talking about sending troops for more than 3-4 months. How do you find right now the situation in France?
Well, in fact, Le Pen has said the exact opposite. She said, hey, if I'm elected, no French soldiers are going to Ukraine, period. They're coming home. We're not getting in the middle of that. Remains to be seen if she'll stick to her word and what she said, but she has said it pretty tough, pretty direct. What we're witnessing across Europe, and it's coming to the United States, is you're not getting a genuine majority opinion and support for the war, for the current government policies, for anything. You're getting a plurality where, you know, I guess like in the case of Labour Party in Britain, they won 42%, Le Pen won 36%. You know, those are minority numbers, but they're being touted like it's a massive victory with, you know, real implications for control of the government. And they will have some control, but there's not complete control, not by any stretch.
Let's talk about the SCO summit in Kazakhstan. And how did you find this summit, and how important is this type of summits when it comes to the relationship within BRICS? And we know it's all of these countries are part of BRICS, and right now they're doing this. And the other important point, Larry, in this summit was that China and India, they have decided to talk about their differences and to just resolve the situation between these two countries.
You know, for so many years, the U.S. policy cynically saw the priority of promoting conflict between Russia and China. In fact, you know, go back to the whole INF treaty has recently come up. with basically Russia saying, okay, the United States is violating, you know, they abandoned the treaty. They're now trying to place some of these intermediate missiles in places like the Philippines and in Europe. So by God, we're going to do the same, only we can do it faster, better, with more. Well, one of the initial impetus for that INF treaty was Russia was concerned about China. So Russia was looking back in the 70s and early 80s into a nuclear deterrent against China. They were going, wait, I thought they were both commies. And I thought they both like loved each other. Well, no. China and Russia were, you know, they had some differences of opinion in diplomatic speak. That's going by the board now. Now you see China and Russia working together in a genuine, sincere friendship of mutual respect, because they realize, man, we're both in the same damn boat, and if we don't row together, we're going to sink. So they're in a battle against the West, and so this the BRICS represents a fundamental realignment of the global economy, how countries are going to trade, how they're going to finance their operations. You know, up to this point, Russia and, I mean, New York and London had really become the centers for international finance. And everybody had to go through there because the dollar was king. And the Brits still imagined themselves as this, you know, king of the world on top of the heap. But now, increasingly, you know, Saudi Arabia's telling the United States, remember that deal we had where we're going to buy and sell oil all with dollars? That's not happening anymore. We're done. China's unloading U.S. treasuries, buying up more gold. Russia shut out of the U.S. economy, except when the United States still needs stuff from Russia, you know, yeah, we're going to sanction you except for that uranium. We still want that, so sell that to us. I mean, it's ridiculous. And the growth of BRICS in your lifetime, you'll look back on this period and realize this was as significant as what happened at the end of World War II, when in the night, was it 47, 48, they had the conference up in New Hampshire, and out of that came the World Bank, the International Monetary Fund, basically tools of colonial control, pseudo-colonial control. You know, we dressed it up as, oh, this is to help with development, but it's still to let the United States control the rest of the world. I think you're going to see the World Bank and the International Monetary Fund fade in importance in the coming years, and new institutions will rise up that will cater to the big five, Russia, China, Brazil, India, South Africa, and to the rest of the global South. So it will, the West will no longer be, you know, the popular party that all the high school kids want to go to. They'll see it as, you know, there's now like the senior citizen, the nursing home, and everybody's sitting on a bedpan. Boy, nobody wants to be around that. So, you know, I see the world moving away from the West. That's where we're headed.
What's important, Larry, was India and China deciding to talk with each other on their differences.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, no, I was just, you're correct, because so that's one of the outflows of this relationship between Russia and China. Now, China and India both recognize, you know what? Those Americans are some genuine pricks. I mean, they're not good people. They want to sanction us. They want to punish us. They want to attack us economically. They want to criticize, you know, like India. They want to criticize us for what we do with our political opposition when those bastards are locking up Donald Trump and his followers? And they want to lecture us? I don't think so. And we're like, no. We're 3 to 4 times the size of the United States. So, you know, we're not, they're going to treat us with respect. You know, people underestimate the importance of respect. And they should be blaring Aretha Franklin, you know, R-E-S-P-E-C-T, baby. And so, yeah, China and Brazil trying to find a peaceful path forward. And the same way, I think you'll find ultimately India and Pakistan. Because let's not forget, in all of these equations of international relations, the United States is behind the scenes stirring the pot, encouraging these countries to fight each other, encouraging these countries to escalate into conflict so that we cynically can gain more control.
What's amazing about these type of summits, Larry, you see India and Pakistan, Iran, Belarus right now, just members of SCO. Right now we had Turkey, Saudi Arabia, and UAE, Qatar, Azerbaijan as dialogue partners.
Yeah.
And Larry, it's so amazing to see Turkey again in this SCO. And the question is, what's the importance of Turkey being part of NATO if their domestic policy, their foreign policy, their military ambitions, all is translated in that region?
Well, you gotta wonder if the Turks are sadomasochists, you know, the guys that like to get tied up and beaten, and they get some sort of, you know, sexual thrill or pleasure from it. Because that's been they've basically been an S&M bondage slave to Europe and to NATO for the last 30 years. So here's Turkey saying, you know, initially, oh, yeah, let's join the EU club because we consider ourselves Europeans. Europeans don't consider Turks as Europeans. They consider them a bunch of Middle Eastern, there's a derogatory term about it starts with sand and it ends with an N-word. That's how they view the Turks. Bunch of savages, Muslim savages. They're not cultured like us Europeans. You know, yeah, they're good enough to come into Germany and clean our toilets, maybe have a coffee shop or two. But, you know, leadership positions, leading in business, are you kidding me? You're Turks. You're meant to be servants. So over the years, everything Turkey tried to do to get into the EU, you go, no, not good enough. No. They kept shoving them back. I mean, God, if I was Turk, I would have been pissed off a long time ago. It's like, why are we putting up with this? To get disrespected. I mean, you know, look, think how you would react if every time you went into some guy, you were trying to be friends with your neighbor. And every time he walked in, he made some insult about you, about your looks, about your height, about your weight. And I'm not suggesting that you're short, fat, and ugly, okay? But if he kept telling you that you're short, fat, and ugly, and doing that in front of like your wife, and it just being insulting to you, I bet you'd say, you know what? I'm not visiting that guy anymore. I don't want to be around him. I don't want to be associated with him. I don't want to do anything to help him out. Because all he's doing is insulting me, denigrating me, and at times sanctioning me. And that's where Turkey is now. They've awakened to the fact that, because you remember last year, they broke the deal they made with Russia about holding on to those guys from the Azov. And they broke it because they got some promises, vague promises from Biden and then from the EU. Oh, yeah, you do this and, yeah, you get all these planes. Didn't happen. They got lied to. They got taken advantage of. So now they show up at the SCO. And these people like to treat them with respect. take him seriously, listen to him. Plus, I mean, the Turks are not stupid. They're what? Here they are. They say, okay, we're the second largest army in NATO. And we're watching all these other NATO clowns mouthing off, but they, you know, they're not going to be the ones actually ponying up soldiers and materiel. And they're getting their ass kicked in Ukraine. Their equipment doesn't work. Their drones are a second class quality. Their military strategy sucks. And Russia's on a roll. And Russia's our neighbor. And Russia's getting stronger militarily. So we as Turks got to ask a question. Do we want to be hostile with Russia, or do we want to get along? Do I have new neighbors? Have a barbecue together. I think Turkey's decided to opt for, let's have a barbecue with the Russians. You know, we can sit down and we will be best of friends. And it's sort of out of that, you've seen Turkey now backing away from the West. Because remember 12 years ago when the West decided, okay, yeah, we're going to get rid of this Bashar al-Assad. We don't like him. Why? Oh, he's a terrorist. Yeah, but he's actually fought to protect Christians and Muslims and Druze, and he's actually, you know, a fair guy. Oh no, gotta get rid of him. And they got Turkey to buy into it. Turkey played a major role in shipping weapons into Syria, and then backing insurgent groups, radical Muslim groups, also armed and trained by the CIA. They were attacking Syria. There was the Turks who were directly involved with the CIA base in Benghazi, where the weapons were being gathered up, collected, and sent from there on ships into Turkey. And in fact, it was David Petraeus, the CIA director, went out to Turkey on September 4th, a week before the attack on the Benghazi consulate, as they called it, and to tell the Turks, hey, we got to shut this program down for now, because we're worried it'll affect Barack Obama's reelection campaign. This was 2012. And so it was the next week that Ambassador Chris Stevens was in Benghazi meeting with the Turkish diplomat, because they were the on-the-ground coordinators. So Turkey's gone from that and signed on fully on board with this, you know, attempted subversion of Syria, to now saying, you know what? We're going to reconcile ourselves with Syria. We're going to have talks, see if we can get the Syrians to crack down on all these crazy Peshmerga that are coming out of the Kurdish regions, and, you know, that we can actually get back to normalized relations. Well, the U.S. is going, wait a second, hell no, you're not. And Turks are going, hell yes, we are. So as I say, this, here's the United States that thought it had control of this whole region, and it's starting to fall apart. And Turkey, like any normal country with self-interest, is saying, I'm better off with those guys than I am with these guys.
What's so amazing about SCO, BRICS, is you bring countries that they already have differences, and Pakistan, India, China, Iran, Saudi Arabia, and they all agree to fight for a greater good for all of them. And right now, Larry, they're talking about that none of these countries at SCO summit, none of these countries can interfere in the internal affairs of countries. And this is the way that we've been witnessing the behavior of the United States for such a long time, was just the interference in the internal affairs of other countries, considering NGOs. How do you see these new attitudes on their part?
So a variety of these different organizations have sprung up, you know, the Shanghai Cooperative Organization and BRICS. I think what you're going to see going forward is that the SCO is going to be subsumed into BRICS. So all these different organizations, I know there's like the International Russophile Movement, MIR. I think that's also going to be folded into BRICS. That's encouraging a multinodal approach to the world. They use the term multipolar. I prefer the term multinodal. I think it's a more accurate description of what you're trying to create. You're not trying to create a pyramid. You're trying to create a network of, everyone's not equal, but everybody has equal access to the system. And there are stronger countries and weaker countries in that mix, but by as they come together and share, they strengthen each other. So as these different countries start, you know, they come into this, I think we're going to end up seeing a new United Nations, frankly. The current United Nations is broken because it's under the control of the colonial empires. Let's face it. Apart from Russia and China, it's under the control of France, Britain, and the United States. Those three countries can exercise a veto. And why in God's name should France and the United Kingdom be considered, quote, the leading nations of the world? India dwarfs them. Brazil dwarfs them. So right away, there are countries in the global south that are grossly underrepresented in that organization. You know, we got to be honest. The West, these legacy colonial dictators still want to control all the little brown people. Oh, you little brown people around the world got to, you know, step to the line, do what we say, or else we're going to sanction you. So I think both Russia and China are recognizing, you know what, we need to have a new global organization that's more equal, so that actually the countries that are the largest and have the largest economies, yeah, they get to have an important say, but they don't necessarily get to veto and control the world. And so again, I think the United States has damaged itself, its reputation and its credibility over the last 2 years. Do you remember that when Oprah Winfrey had this television show and she was giving away cars and she was like going, and you got a car and you got a car and you got a car. Well, the United States is like a perverse version of Oprah Winfrey, but instead of giving away cars, we're doing sanctions. You got sanctions and you got sanctions and you got sanctions. I mean, good God, they are sanctioning Russian billionaires who have not committed a crime, who are not charged with a crime, but just because they're Russian, hey, we're taking your money. That's a little racist. But what do you expect out of, particularly out of Europe? I mean, the legacy of Europe and Africa, good God, how many millions died at the hands of these colonial rulers? And it's, you know, it's about time that Europe's sort of getting its comeuppance.